503 Report, where America's voice is heard. Thank you for listening online. Be sure to check out our website weekly as we bring Sacramento and the world to you. The 503 Report at www.503report.com, where America's voice is heard.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. Those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago.
One of my all-time favorite singers, one of my all-time favorite songs. I can't wait until Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving when I can play Mr. Andy Williams, the most wonderful time of the year. The time where we always get together, we gather around with family and friends, try to do that throughout the year as much as we can, but we always set aside time at Thanksgiving and this time of year for the next month or so where we really concentrate on our families and our friends, our loved ones. Let me think about the men and the women who protect us and keep us free and so we can enjoy what we have. And I always look forward to this time of the year. Food, well, you can't get enough of it this time of the year. You're going to gain 10 pounds. Good thing I just lost 40 because that is going to be coming on. We have a lot going on in the world and in the state, but right now we're going to celebrate the time of the year. And with me, as always, my good friend, Andrew Wellborn. Andrew, how you doing, pal?
Oh, we're doing great. You know, we're day after Thanksgiving, and, of course, we did everything that everybody did out there. And I have to tell you, yeah, we slaughtered a turkey. We did that turkey, and, you know, I'm going to have turkey between now and maybe New Year's by the time that turkey is done. And I have to tell you, you know, it is the most wonderful time of the year, but unfortunately, man, when you take a look at some of these numbers that were just released out of California's Department of Treasury, it is definitely not the most wonderful time of the year going into this weekend for the state of California. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And, of course, we are broadcasting on iTunes where America's voice is heard, Tim.
We are, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your lovely wife. And, yeah, those numbers, they just kind of came out, and I'm sure that the Democrats are not – well, anybody who pays attention to politics is not really happy with those numbers out there. You'll be getting into those and letting the folks know about those. But, you know, it is Black Friday and folks are out shopping. I'd like to say that I've already got mine done for the year. You know, I have 11 grandkids, three great-grandkids, and I've pretty much got mine all wrapped up. I don't know. How about you, buddy? How are you doing? means you're not doing so good.
Huh? Well, I mean, you know, I don't have that many those many individuals out there that I have to worry about, as most folks know. And so I had a great day yesterday, man.
That's what it's all about.
Sat around, I watched all three football games. I'm having a horrible season this year. Oh, man, between my Cowboys and my Longhorns, man, this season has just probably been one of the worst football seasons I've ever experienced as an individual fan. But I tell you, you know, we sat around, we watched that Macy Day Thanksgiving parade. And that was awesome. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. You get a taste of Broadway right there, then every float, those balloons are just huge, and marching band that goes and plays their songs. And then today's entertainers, I have to tell you, you know, I I think I only recognize three of the 15, 30 stars. I mean, Pat Benatar, obviously my generation, Train, you know, and then, of course, Mariah Carey. Beyond that, boy, I don't even know who some of those 15-year-olds were. I mean, I don't know if they were 15-year-olds, but they look like they were 15-year-olds singing some of the songs I've never, ever heard. I don't know. Am I getting old?
No, you're not, Andrew, because I have no idea who they are either, and they're probably, they are older than that. When they say world-famous superstar,
international
superstar, and you're like, who? I have no idea. But anyway, you know, it is that time of the year. And businesses, of course, Andrew, right now are hoping that they're going to see better numbers, maybe better numbers than the state of California after the release from the Treasury report, buddy.
Look, it is about the economy, and we all know this is Black Friday, that going into the biggest shopping season of the year right now, coming into that day after Thanksgiving. And, you know, I'm not going to be out there. I'm telling you right now. I mean, look where we are. We're broadcasting. We got a couple brand-new friends and guests in the studios, and I'll get to them here in a little bit. But I'm not going out there to – well, at least I don't think I'm going out there, but I'm not home yet, so I don't really know what's stored when I get home.
Absolutely. And like I said, that's why I got mine done. But, you know, travel and here in the United States, you know, heightened security as it is all over the world right now, this time of the year. We haven't heard, you know, knock on wood, anything. Everything seems to be going well. The only thing out there messing with everybody out there right now is the weather from the Midwest all the way through the East right now, Andrew.
Well, I'm just happy to see we got a little snow this week. And it's been a long time, folks out there listening up here in Northeastern California, particularly our local audience, that we have seen the snow this week of Thanksgiving. Usually, you know, I spend this week kind of preparing for the snow, but it showed up.
Hoping for
know.
The snow?
Yeah, I know.
You want a snow dance? Whatever.
I'll tell you what, man. It's good to see the snow up there. At least, you know, at least our water issues up here in this part of the state are looking like they're going to be okay. Now, the rest of the state, you guys are just going to be screwed. That's all there is to it until Mother Nature decides to help you guys out down there in Southern California.
And El Nino has not quite hit here yet. It's hit everywhere else. It's skirting the state of California. It's going up north. It's going down south. Mexico getting in. And it's going up to your great state of Texas, where they're seeming to be having just getting hit every single day out there, buddy.
Well, that's every year. I mean, I don't know why people are acting so surprised that, you know, the Midwest down to the south, you know, gets hit like this. Every year we have a drought, and then every year we got floods. Occasionally we got a couple tornadoes. We got the hurricanes that come in. I mean, so, you know, this is not like this is, you know, old news. This happens every year. In fact, I'm just starting trying to figure out how I can get the water from Texas from those
that's
floods.
The key right there. You want to retire, Andrew? That's it.
I'd build a pipeline from Texas to California.
On Obama, he'll nix that.
That's why you do it on the Mexico side of the border. That way you can get the water to California, not worried about these stupid EPAs and some of these issues that we are dealing with right now with our federal government that prevents a lot of things from happening that need to happen in order to make our lives better.
Andrew, speaking of that, fuel prices here in the United States have really dropped recently because of people out there they're doing better. They're driving more economically. And you know that the president just axed the pipeline, and we thought that was really going to even help more here in the United States. But things are going great here in the U.S. right now as far as the consumers are for the prices.
Oh, my gosh, man. You know, we're so bamboozled on the price of oil and gasoline in the state out here, just in California, but across this nation. As we all know, guys, I'm from the state of Texas, understand how the oil industry works. And you know what? The price is where it needs to be. I don't know how many times we're on record the show stating and saying that, you know, the price of a barrel has got to be between $50 and $60 a barrel in order to support U.S. roughneckers out there in the Dakotas to be able to make a living. That's just the price we have to pay. So that $2 to $225, $240 range is what keeps America workforce working in the United States. And that's all it is, man. And so they've been able to maintain a certain price at a certain level for the consumer. And it's just good to see that, you know, the oil companies and individuals within this industry are starting to figure out how to keep the price at a level that is affordable to the American people at what our current, you know, minimum, our wages that we're earning and the way things are going against the American people. It's good to see that at least the price of gas is starting to become manageable.
Do you think that that will be tied in any way, shape, or form when if they get what they want in the $15 minimum wage, Andrew, with that price going up, everything else, of course, is going to have to keep up with that? Is that going to affect the fuel? Is that just a given?
Well, $15 a minimum wage is going to definitely affect a lot of things. is much more than fuel when it comes to that, because most of your roughneckers, man, you know, those guys are earning way more than $15 an hour to be able to extract that oil out of the ground. But ultimately, it's always going to be passed. Anytime a government agency raises the price on behalf of the people, the corporations that are affected are going to, in return, pass that on to you, the consumer. And out here in California, you know, our wage earning capability is way higher than, say, like Missouri. And so, you know, that cost is going to be even greater to the people of the great state of Missouri than it is out here in California.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do pay for that, and we see that. And we're starting to see the markets in the state of California, Andrew, specifically the real estate market, starting to rebound a little bit. It's been a long process out there. Things are starting to slowly but surely edge their way up here in California.
Basic economics 101, folks. Basic trading 101. Look, price of goods and services, well, they'll always go up and up and up. They only come down whenever the general public, you, the listener, everyday individual can no longer afford it. So once a price gets to the point where you can no longer afford it, then it inevitably comes back down to the levels of reason. And that's what we're starting to see across this nation.
All right, Andrew, what do you got for us today, my friend?
All right, folks, time for something you should know, you don't know, maybe you don't want to know, but you're going to know that right now. The year is 1868. An infamous battle at Wasito River, Oklahoma. General Custer attacks a group of Native American Indians, but their chief, Black Cattle, he dies in the attack. A little lighter, 1870, New York Times dubs baseball as the national game. 1901, the U.S. Army War College is established in Washington, D.C. And then, of course, 1920, this is kind of cool, the Mask of Zorro is shown in New York. It's considered the first American superhero film.
Well, the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you, heard every Friday after the news here on 1240 KSW. iTunes, you can catch us there as well, streaming in about a half hour after the show at SierraDailyNews.com. Happy Thanksgiving. Back with the half hour show.
And now, it's live from the high desert in the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's the 503 Report, Northeastern California's original political talk show, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And here's your host, Tim Reinertsen.
Thank you, Stan. Welcome back, everybody. It is our favorite day of the week after probably one of the best holidays there is out there, at least in the top two, Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving weekend to everybody on our favorite day of the week, Friday, the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And with, yeah, as always, to my right, my good friend and wearing the Texas colors, Woo! Andrew Wellborn. How you doing, buddy?
Hooking them horns no matter what, man. Dedicated and loyal to the end no matter what. And that's the point, folks. You know, we talk about the dedication to our sports teams. Well, maybe it's time for us to become more and more dedicated to the players within our political system, regardless of what side you're on. If you're on the left, obviously Hillary Clinton's going to be your choice. If you're on the right, we don't know. There's like 25 of them, and hopefully they're going to start to drop off. But I have to tell you, you know, great time this week, and, you know, as we were talking about in the first part of the show, man, I did my part slaying a couple turkeys and doing my part to keep the farmers and all the agricultural guys out there employed as far as what we produced on our dinner table. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Podcasting on iTunes, where America's voice is heard. You know what? Last week I was angry. You know, I was a little fired up about those rabid dogs, and rabid dogs seems to be the thing that I like to use from time to time. I mean, we forget, folks. Rabid dogs have got to be put down, and you know what? One of the most famous movies that we have forgotten, Old Yeller had to die when it came to the conclusion of that movie. And, well, what I'm getting at, you know, I'm going, you know, it made me so upset last week that I did not get into my college football. And, you know, fortunately, I guess it's a good thing that no college football team or NFL team out there has got the mascot called the Rabid Dogs. Yeah. But I have to tell you, it'd be kind of cool battle cry. But I tell you, man, you know, top five football coming in, Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, Iowa, and Michigan. Boy, I tell you, the committee has made a couple of jumps and move some people up and down. Oklahoma, you know, Doug, I know you're out there listening, Doug, and as much as I hate to say Oklahoma is there over my Longhorns, but at least the Big 12 is represented in this top four pick. And then, of course, Iowa and Michigan State, you know, they're going to hold their fates in their own hands. You know, eventually they're probably going to end up playing each other for the Big 10 championship coming up here real soon. College football is starting to wrap up, and I got to tell you, you know, last week were some good games, some deciding games, interconference play, SEC beating up on each other like like they always do. The Big 12 knocked each other out. Pac-12 is just not even on the radar this year for the most part. But even though we talk about how great this committee selection is going to be as far as actually deciding who a national champion is, eventually it's going to have to be evolved because, you know, four picks is just not going to work. Eight teams is what I keep talking about as far as a legitimate playoff system to decide who the national championship will go to.
Absolutely. Well, of course, in that top four last week was Notre Dame. They won. They didn't play very well when they got knocked back a little bit, but they have a big game against Stanford this week, so they may be able to get back in there. But you're correct, that Michigan State, if you watched that game, Michigan State, Ohio State last week, boy, that was a great game. Michigan State played terrific football against the last year's national
champ. That's what happens. I mean, you know, rival games bring out the best of all players, and, you know, we could talk about how Notre Dame's never played anybody. Clemson being number one, I have to tell you, I don't know if I agree with Clemson being number one due to the fact they haven't played anybody. Yeah. I mean, their toughest team has been Florida State, and where's Florida State? I mean, they're going to play an ACC championship game between them and Duke. I mean, go Duke as far as I'm concerned when it comes, you know, to prove the point. But, you know, interesting. Great weekend coming up and college football. And you guys know I love it and I'm excited about it. And, you know, like you said, man, I'm wearing my Texas Longhorn orange here in the studio. And that's the point, folks. I mean, we all know my horns suck this year. I got my Dallas Cowboy coffee cup here and we all know what's going on with Dallas. But the point is that you never leave your team. You never leave the support of the individuals. And, you know, if we could just get that evolved into politics, get behind your candidates. Don't just, you know, show up whenever an election day happens. It's a year-round thing. I mean, we spend so much time following players within our favorite sports teams. Eventually, maybe we could do the same thing when it comes to who our political players are, because their political players, folks, have way more effect over you every day than any player on your favorite sports team.
And speaking of that, I don't know if you saw the story, but well, you heard this one, I'm sure that you did, that Louisiana had a gubernatorial election and a Democrat took that seat. And there was a gentleman, a political consultant from Sacramento, a Republican, who played a key role in the defeat of the Republican in that state. Now, something we've talked about for a long time, Republicans, if they don't get their candidate because he was backing the guy that the Republican won and went up against the Democrat. So he got away from that, and he helped form a bipartisan committee to help bring down the Republican candidate in Louisiana. How could he do that?
Classic case of us as Republicans, and you guys all know I favor the Republican side of the political scene. Classic case of us eating our young. I mean, it happens all the time. Rod Strutzman, first of all, you're out of Sacramento, California, Mr. Strutzman. Why are you going and meddling in Louisiana? You know, I mean, I get it. The Republican Party is pretty much going to be decimated out here in California, and you got to go out there and find viable candidates where you can make a living. But man, when you are meddling in a state that, first of all, you don't even know what it's about in Louisiana, man. I mean, for a Californian to go down to the southern part of this nation and try to bring a Northern California political perspective into a southern state is going to be disastrous. And so, you know, stay home. We saw this with Congressman Doug Ossie in the Ami Barra race down in Sacramento. I mean, when Congressman Tom McClintock got involved with that race, rather than just, you know, we had great opportunity to have the Republican and defeat that Democrat, but in usual fashion, since we don't like our candidates, as you put it, Tim, what do? We eat our young. So, hey, you know, look, if our guy's not going to win, then no one's going to win. That attitude is ridiculously stupid amongst the Republicans who are doing this every day, not just down in Louisiana, but we see it all the time out here in California. And it's frustrating to me sometimes when I just listen and see what they're doing, because there's no reason for it. A Republican candidate is a Republican candidate. Democrats are great at just lining up with their candidate because they look at a Democrat as being a Democrat. As Republicans, you know, all these conservative talk show guys across this nation, well, first of all, they're not conservative. They're libertarians, as we point out all the time on this show. This point of view that they're taking is going to be detrimental, I believe, and possibly even at our national level. So, you know, the impact of the Louisiana governorship actually going over to the Democrats could be an indicator of what's going to come as the rest of this nation looks to come into this election process.
And that's just one of, you know, things have been building well for the Republican Party for the past year or so, lining up for the 2016 presidential race. But to see that down there, and I know it's a small state, but that has been with, you know, Governor Bobby Jindal, who was a presidential candidate, turned out and didn't want to do it anymore. And they gave it up to a Democrat over there. And that, in the South, you know, having a foothold in there was something that we could build on, Andrew, like you said. And to see them go down and to go in there and help the other party win, that guy needs to get away from there. He needs to get out of the party. He doesn't need to consult anymore. Heaven forbid if he comes back to Sacramento and helps somebody in California.
You know, we have a couple guests in studio with us. We have Ryan and Becky from Missouri, and hopefully we can get you guys to tune into our show when you go back to Missouri. But I think they'll agree with me whenever I say a Southern Democrat is a whole lot different than some of the Democrats that are being portrayed at the national level. And I guarantee you a Southern Democrat is a whole lot different than a California left this Democrat when it comes to this. So the people of Louisiana look at Democrats as more conservative, not the way we look at them out here. And for this guy to go out there and interfere with this guy because he had a marital affair, I mean, that's between him and the people and his family when it comes to this. And so, yeah, I get it, man. You know, we're going to champion and we're going to crusade against that. We can't have Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and a governorship, you know, begin to rise within the Republicans. We got to have all the purest and the cleanest individuals, and that is the debate. Don't get me wrong. That is the debate when it comes to the morality. But, you know, as we say all the time, morals, values, and ethics are regionally defined. And just because your morals and values and ethics within wherever you live might not represent or be indicative of the rest of the nation.
You know, and I haven't heard yet, Andrew, and I haven't heard the bandwagon of them trumping it up that a Democrat. I haven't heard it like the Republicans, you know, when we started sweeping in with some victories here and there, building up to, like I said, to the 2016 election. I haven't heard a lot of that yet, but it's going to be a building block for them, this big win down there in Louisiana.
All right, California, let's talk, man. You know what? More importantly, we're going to do a little union talk here to amongst our state employees and government employees up and down California. We're going to throw out some unfortunate numbers. Unemployment alone from the federal government right now is $10 billion. Now, that $10 billion was not reflected in the overall governor's budget over the last budgetary process. So at this point in time, that takes our wall of debt to almost $43 billion in California. $43 billion. Now, how about this? Since 1980, Californians have been bonding themselves, literally, putting themselves in bondage, literally, with $1.5 trillion in bonds. Think about that, folks. We have sold bonds for an incredible amount of reasons in the state of California over the last three decades. $1.5 trillion worth of debt out here in the California's economy. How many people realize that, folks? All of our listeners, how many understand that we have been that far in debt for such a long time? And I got to tell you, $6 billion a year, okay, goes to pay for one-third of 1 million unemployed. So do the math on that, 300,000-400,000 people. We're paying $6 billion a year in unemployment benefits to the unemployed. 300,000-400,000 people. That's it, man, for that amount of money out here in the state of California.
As the jobs continue to leave our great state all the time, and they keep on taunting, the left keeps on saying how great the economy and how much better it is doing here in the great state of California, and we keep on getting more and more tax revenue. And as you see, you had some numbers over there earlier, Andrew. The numbers really aren't quite adding up to all that.
Well, the problem is this. When we sell a bond to you, I'm sorry. You, the individual, don't end up paying the bond. You, the individual, ends up paying for the bond. But the bonds go to where? Wall Street. Wall Street are the ones who pick up the bonds and make the profits. So when it comes down to the $1.5 trillion in bonds since the mid-1980s, ready for this? $337 billion of it over the last 30 years have been for the state of California. $10 billion of that has been an obligation to our general fund. In Sacramento, at the municipal level, one-third of the general fund pays for its $336 billion in bond debt over the last three decades. Now, you ready for this? You want to know why? You don't want to know what the two largest reasons to borrow are? It is to meet insurance and the pension costs.
Wow, the 503 report bringing Sacramento and the world to you here every Friday right after the news at 12:15. iPod and iTunes, you can catch us there as well, streaming. And a half hour for the show at 12:40 KSW. Stay tuned, more of the 503 report. The views and opinions expressed on the 503 report do not necessarily represent those of staff or management of KSUE or Sierra Broadcasting Company, and are brought to you solely by Andrew Wellborn and the 503 Network.
Okay, California, time for something you should know, maybe you don't know, maybe you don't want to know, but you're going to know that right now. The year is 1934. Bank robber Babyface Neslin. He dies in a shootout with the FBI. Well, they got that rascal. You know, we need to promote the fact that criminals will end up losing no matter what. 1971, the Soviet Mars 2s becomes the first spacecraft to crash and land on Mars, huh? 1973, this kind of gets into a little bit that we talked about on the first part of the show. U.S. President Richard Nixon signs the Emergency Petroleum Allocation Act. It authorizing petroleum price reductions, allocations, and marketing controls. Then, of course, 1989, Colombian jetliner bombed, and it killed 107 individuals. Boy, this is great history. We should know this. You ready? 1991. The Undertaker beats Hulk Hogan to become the new WWF champion. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you, broadcasting on iTunes, where America's voice is heard.
And we are, and those guys are still, I think, wrestling to this day, 25 years later. It is Friday. It's the day after Thanksgiving. I hope everybody is with their family and their friends enjoying themselves like we have and we are continuing to do. And we are here today to continue to bring news, what's going on in this great state of ours and this nation, to listeners. And we can't thank iTunes enough for what they're doing for us, and John Shuford as well. Past 4 years, you can catch us there on iTunes, streaming live. That's very exciting, Andrew.
Well, it looks like the San Francisco-based Administrative Office of the Courts is under a little rebellion from the lower courts across the state of California. And in accordance to the Alliance of California Judges, it looks like the lower courts are starting to fight against the San Francisco power from the Supreme Court, basically allocating distribution of monies and things that need to go into other programs. And it seems like the lower courts outside of the Bay Area are saying, hey, wait a minute, man, you guys are hogging all the money. We don't have the ability to this point to be able to fund our courts. And so looks like there's a movement now with these groups of lower courts to actually try to remove the authority of that operating administration out of San Francisco, maybe to Sacramento, where you can have a little more oversight. Now, here's the deal, folks, with this. Now, this might not seem like a big deal to you. This might seem like it's a very boring story. But the reality is this. It shows how the Supreme Court of California, which is one of the three branches of our government, is basically in an area that's unchecked. There's no oversight. I mean, the administration of our courts in California not being in Sacramento doesn't seem to make sense to me, because that is a regional control. There is no oversight, and that seems to be the issue. And then clearly you can take a look at some of the practices that our Supreme Court justices out here in California have undertaken, and some of the decisions that they've made, some of the cases that they've heard, clearly show that there is no oversight within our court system. And so, you know, as far as the three balances of powers checking each other, how can you check a balance of power when it's not within the region that you exist with your power? Can you imagine, say, for instance, the Supreme Court of the United States being located, I don't know, outside of Washington, D.C., pick a town, New York City? Could you imagine the lack of oversight that would happen if the Supreme Court of the United States was actually located in New York City instead of Washington, D.C.?
Andrew, do you think with that and with that movement on there with the lower courts, do you think that we're going to see a little bit of a logjam here in the state of California, maybe remove some of the cases that have been presented, and maybe streamlining things a little bit easier and a little bit quicker?
Well, that's what we need to mandate. And, you know, that's the purpose of one of these initiatives that are being filed with the California State Attorney General's office, as far as, you know, in particular with the death penalty cases. But the oversight is not there. I mean, it's no different than, say, for instance, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, the lack of congressional oversight, or the Internal Revenue Service just making up rules and enforcing those rules because they're an agency that believe that they have the power to do so. And so the the court system in California has been very, very powerful because it is not within a region that they're going to be under any type of scrutiny or pressure. And so when you're based out of the most leftist area, then it's easy for you to have the tendency to make decisions that are based on left-wing ideology. And that's what's happening in California. It's not necessarily the voter turnout as far as the initiatives and the support of initiatives and referendum. It's the Supreme Court deciding, the Supreme Court of California, making a decision based on Marin County viewpoints that are going to affect the rest of the state. And sometimes, as we have seen numerous times in our legislative history and, of course, our initiative history, the Supreme Court of California will come out and go against the overwhelming majority in excess of 65 to 70% of sometimes conservative thought within our initiative process.
And they have, and with the death penalty and numerous things, but you were talking about no oversight on there. And with that, Andrew, I guess you or I, if we had no oversight over an organization, an agency that we ran, we would feel we had carte blanche, just like the EPA, to do whatever we wanted to as well.
Well, that's exactly what this this organization, the Alliance of California Judges, is making the claim of. And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, go with those guys.
Yes.
You know, go with the Alliance of California Judges, because the bottom line is this. You know, those decisions are impacting us, not necessarily legislative decisions, because very rarely does the Supreme Court of California overturn most legislative decisions that result in a left base or an ideology.
Well, they do, and it's very difficult, and it's extremely difficult for that to happen here in the great state of California. We're really seeing lately, Andrew, that Governor Brown is really, wherever he's traveling to, is really championing his global warming wherever he's going. Andrew, he's just hammering that everywhere he goes in his last couple of years, and you don't hear anybody else from his party, the Democratic Party, on board like that. We're in Paris recently, and China, wherever he's going. We know China's big polluters out there, but boy, he is really hammering that still.
I guess this is what he wants his legacy to be. You know, everything from the bullet train, the high-speed rail, as we call it, and in the tunnels that through the Delta that he probably is not going to see developed during his governorship, if not his lifetime.
Absolutely.
But, you know, these are the things that, you know, are legacy-bound, and you know, that the hubris of this is that that's what they get involved with, you know, their own personal legacies. And, you know, when it comes to these numbers, look, I threw out a lot of numbers earlier throughout this show, folks, and I got to give credit to our Democrat treasurer, John Chang, who's actually put these numbers out there. It's tough. As much as I do the research on this, it is tough to find these type of numbers, folks, and you have to have an individual that wants a little bit of transparency. And, you know, I'm praising John Chang, our former state controller, now our treasurer, for coming out and actually exposing these numbers to the effect how much money we have indebted ourselves as the people of California. Now, look, folks, it doesn't matter. You know, these individuals who vote these debts in, they can leave at any point in time. You're still going to be obligated with the debt. And for us to actually go into debt every year in order to function, in order to fund our government, is something that needs to stop. We've been doing it at the federal level for, well, basically since our inception. And so the practice now has just got to stop. With $33, $35, $45 billion in debt out here in California, we pay $6, $7, $8 billion a year just in interest on that debt. In order to maintain that debt, at some point in time, we got to wake up, folks, and realize that these credit cards are going to hurt us badly in the future.
Are you going to see, Andrew, you mentioned $1.5 trillion in bond debt over the past 35 years, three and a half decades here in the state of California. That's nearly about 10% of the national debt of $17, $18 trillion. That is a very scary thought for just one state to be that close to what our great nation is, too.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily that we are in debt at $1.5 trillion. We have just put ourselves in $1.5 trillion within debt within the last three decades, and we still owe $30, $40, $50 billion of that debt at the state level.
Right.
Not necessarily, I mean, actually it's higher than that. It's about $300-something billion, if I recall the number that's spewed out earlier. So you're looking at, you know, $300-something billion in debt at the state level. Oof. And that's from the municipals to the counties, and then of course with the state government. And you know, the big thing that we're starting to see is that a lot of this debt has gone to, and I talk union talk here, guys, has gone to pay for pensions, wages, and so forth for government employees. And that is very critical because, you know, that's going to be one of the championing points for some of these propositions coming up next year that is looking to modify the current pension program out here in California.
If we are that far in debt, Andrew, and they are talking about our $2 or $3 billion maybe a year in a rainy day fund each year, and you continually have businesses and people leave California because of regulations and everything else, you are not going to win that battle.
Well, let's talk about that rainy day fund. You're referring to Proposition 2 that was passed last election cycle, which 69.1% of Californians of voters, yeah, you know, they approved that. They wanted 1.5%, just a little bit, 1.5% of the general fund, you know, to go into a rainy day fund. Of course, this is where it gets kind of complicated. They want to also, you know, capital gains revenues that exceeded 8% of the general fund. Now, what does that mean? I mean,
yeah, thank you.
What does that mean as far as how that is going to be calculated? Well, that's a slippery slope accounting calculation. And so as a result, you know, we're in a dispute right now because only $3.7 billion has been set aside for the Proposition 2 mandates. And right now, the Legislative Analysis Office has come out and they're claiming that it should be close to six at $5.9 billion. And so the counter to that is the adjustments of the 8% over the general fund when it comes to capital gains. These slippery slope accounting techniques and formulas of what we bonded ourselves so many times, whether it be Proposition 2 calculation formula all the way to Proposition 98 mandatory minimum education funding formulas. These formulas are what are beginning to hurt us, folks. And when you're looking at almost $6 billion in estimated surplus based on the budget, I mean, doesn't that open up another question? I mean, if we are able to put $6 billion into a surplus, are we not taxing people too much? I mean, what do we need $6 billion? Well, how come we just don't operate within our means to where that $6 billion is balanced out and that $6 billion now goes back to you, the taxpayer, so that you can do what you want to as far as spending it maybe this Black Friday today, yeah, and be able to support your family and generate other tax revenues as a result of you making the individual decision, yeah, rather than a proposition like 30 mandating it on you.
And speaking of 30, we're almost out of time, but Prop 30, boy, they're really getting behind that again because that is set to expire next year, Andrew, and they want to keep that going again. So they're really they're gathering those signatures as we speak, buddy.
It's kind of funny because, you know, this is kind of one of those where the table turns here a little bit. I mean, you know, as a Republican strategist, you can now champion a message. No, we don't need to extend it because we've got the money. So as Republicans, it's easy to set up a campaign, and it's going to make Governor Jerry Brown, the legislature, and all the leftists out here, should we say, in California, begin to, you know, contemplate this. I mean, so if we're looking at $2.5 to $6 billion from reserve, well, where do we need? Why do we need to extend this? Okay, so we've got a surplus, and so you can craft that message in a way to make voters understand that, hey, it's just time to end this. And Governor Brown, right now he's going to be caught up in between this because, yeah, I've read where, you know, publicly he's putting his face out there that no, they need to expire on time because that was my word. That's what he's saying. But it's easy for him to do that when he knows the coalition's way out there on the left are looking to move the initiative forward. And so, you know, as a governor, he can sit there and say, no, we need them to expire. They could lose that position and then have Proposition 30 taxes extended forever. I'm sorry, temporary until 2030. That's what it was,
exactly.
Temporary to 2030, you know, and then be able to save face and say, well, look, I did my best to not, you know, keep this tax on you, the people of California.
And boy, I went out and I championed for, you know, we haven't heard anything on there, and that is just crazy. But we knew that they were going to be doing that. We've talked about it here on the 503 Report. You can go back to our past shows, and we talked about that they were going to be wanting to go after that Prop 30. And it looks like they have gathered or starting to gather enough of those signatures out there to get that rolling again, to have that temporary tax extended to 2030.
I find this kind of interesting because under Proposition 2, and, you know, to all the union guys out there at the table with the governor, you know, we forget that 50% of that rainy day and 50% of that debt payoff That debt payoff, that 50% of that $6 billion is supposed to go to under Proposition 2, is set aside, supposed to be, including retirement and health care benefits for public employees. And what do we all know about public employees at this point in time? Yeah, the governor is looking to put that cost on you. The Democrats are looking to put that cost on you when the people of California have already said, no, we'll do it through bonds so that you don't suffer as a government employee. So balance is going to be the key, folks. We got to find the balance between the government employees and, of course, the private sector out here. And as we always say, man, you know, you can't have any type of success and opportunity as a public employee unless the private employee is successful.
And we've always said that, Andrew.
Okay, folks, time for our favorite book. It comes from Matthew 9:29. It is done unto you as you believe. God bless you, America.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
And, of course, we always want to thank those men and women who go to work every day, working the toughest beat in the state, performing a duty so that you, our listener, up and down the state of California and across this nation, can be safe.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Heard every Friday about 12:15, about 20 minutes after the show at sierradailynews.com. And you can also catch 4 years worth of shows on iTunes. We can't thank them enough and John Schuford enough. Grab a cup of coffee, another way to catch our show. Saturdays at 7, right before the news and Swap Shop, and grab a cup of coffee. Sunday mornings at 7:30 before pre-programmed shows. You can catch us there as well. I highly recommend going to the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard, and on iTunes as well. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy your family and friends, and remember, we are all born free.
Let me think.